there's always going to be new faces. That being said, we will not be making changes just simply for the sake of saying that we made changes. Kyle built a very good hockey team. I think he made excellent adjustments along the way. And I think Sheldon is an excellent coach. I think it's important to sort of state that I see both of them as being extremely important in getting us to the next level so that when we do approach next year and we do come back, that we are ready to take that next step.
All right, well, that answers a lot of questions. It's Fan Drive Time, Ben Ennis, Stephen Brunt. What else is there to say? I mean, there's no more. What is the other sliding doors? We don't. Okay, that answered it, didn't it?
Sort of, yeah. I was just kind of thinking how much I liked it over the music bed. Kind of.
Yeah.
It kind of worked.
Amy Winehouse.
Yes.
Sorry for the podcast listeners.
Yeah, you're not. I know you're not getting. You're getting something less good.
For me, Amy Winehouse came into my life after her untimely demise.
After the end of hers, yes.
Yeah, she's incredible.
Yeah.
Truly.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anyways.
But it did kind of jive with the whole, it kind of worked as a piece. Congratulations to Andrew Holland, because.
Yeah. Exactly. Oh, I see. Yeah, yeah.
See, he figured it out.
Yeah. Okay. All right, so this is it. Hey, you know what? Let me read the liner, and then we'll get into it. Today's top story brought to you by Thornhill Toyota, your local Toyota store since 1969. Come for the history, stay for the future. Dufferin, north of Steeles. Well, that was a part of it. The latest installment of Sheldon Keefe, Kyle Dubas, Brendan Shanahan stepping up to a dais and addressing yet another defeat, except they were kind of speaking in not triumphant tones, but it was totally like... I will say I was not anticipating today. It didn't feel like it was going to be an epic moment. At the end of the 7-game series last year, I was like, what are these guys going to say? What can you say? What are the sound bites that come out of this thing? And it was so much of a focused on the Mitch Marner, Austin Matthews part of the equation.
Yes.
But these guys were defiant at that point as well. Here's where I'm at, Stephen. Everybody, Brendan Shanahan, Kyle Dubas, Sheldon Keefe, and to a lesser extent, the players, but everybody's going down with the ship. This is it. It was also revealed to me, I didn't know this today, but in Elliot Friedman's most recent edition of 32 Thoughts, which you can read on sportsnet.ca, Kyle Dubas's contract currently extends for one more year. So next season is the last year of his deal. So making him a lame duck GM, which I suppose you can do. It's different than a head coach where the players have to, you know, why do I have to listen to you? You're going to be canned. You're gone next year. But it does make the contract negotiations that he has to undertake this offseason a little bit interesting. Also, it's kind of a very important offseason. Next offseason is the most important offseason in this recent history of this franchise, with Austin Matthews at that point being eligible for a contract extension and at that point being 1 year away from unrestricted free agency.
Yes. All of that is correct.
Mm-hmm.
Every bit of that is correct. So,
okay,
where do we want to start with this? So the message today was that it wasn't as bad as last year.
Yeah.
Even though last year, as you say, I don't think my memory's not that great anymore, but I don't think they got up there and said, we are going to all resign in shame because of what just happened.
No.
Right? No one fell on a sword or anything along those lines, right? I don't recall that, but at least now it's a great point of comparison because you can say, but yeah, we lost in the first round again, but it was way better than last year, which is true, by the way. It was way better. No, it was way better than last year, but I know the result's the same, but it was different. Not different in the outcome, but different in the getting there. So now last year is the nadir or the nadir. Mm-hmm. I never know which one it is, but it was.
Always go with nadir, but I also used to call it cutter, and it's everybody's calling it Qatar.
Yeah, we haven't got that one figured out. We'll figure it out by November.
Yeah,
but yeah, so last was the low point. So now you've got a point of comparison. Say, well, look, it's not like last year because last year that was awful. We coughed it up to a team that finished 28 points behind us in the standings and didn't show up. But this year we showed up and we fought hard and we fought nobly against the 2-time defending Stanley Cup champions. And in terms of the specifics, you knew you weren't going to get a whole heck of a lot out of this. That's not really the time when you get specifics. But there was kind of a tacit endorsement of the status quo for sure.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you, the Dubas thing is interesting because... it's a bunch of layers here, right? So you know, Brendan Shanahan has now been in the job for what, 8-9 years, something like that.
Yeah.
Right? Okay. Mm-hmm. So, and he was hired to clean up by the owners of Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment to build a winning team from the ground up, take it right down to the studs and then build her all the way up. And then he hired Kyle Dubas eventually after having other people in that job running his hockey team and having, to make a choice. And then Kyle Dubas eventually hired his own coach, Sheldon Keefe. So there's a line here. But let's go back to that the starting point of this, which is Brendan Shanahan has the confidence continues, we think, to enjoy the confidence of Bell, Rogers, Larry Tannenbaum, who own this company. As a business, it doesn't really matter what he does or what anybody does because they're going to make loads of money. But if the goal is to win a championship, then they may well be looking at their watches and saying, okay, where are we on the old timeline here? And if Kyle Dubas, if you have to make a decision about extending Kyle Dubas, which I would think you would, then that's a decision that's going to kick back to Brendan Shanahan, which is going to kick back to ownership, or going to say, hang on, where are we here right now?
Mm-hmm.
So I think the question that none of us can answer, and I'm about to paint myself into a corner here, because I do not know what those guys are thinking. The guys, I don't know what Larry Tannenbaum and the people from Bell and the people from our place are thinking about the direction here. I do think that after the experience of having the Raptors win a world championship, that is the goal here, is to get to win something, not just win a first round, but to win the Stanley Cup. And I would, penny for their thoughts, because whatever those guys said today on the dais,
yeah,
doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm. And it should also be mentioned that before Masai Ujiri pulls off the tremendous deal for Kawhi Leonard, that the patience was wearing a bit thin with him and that organization. I mean, they had tremendous regular season success, and they could beat everybody that wasn't LeBron James in the Eastern Conference. The only problem was LeBron James was in the Eastern Conference till he wasn't, and that's also part of the Kawhi story. But yeah, and then he wins a championship, and then in that sport, you win a championship, and especially in the surprising fashion they did it with the swing for the fences trade, you get the lifetime contract, which apparently Masai Ujiri has received. Now, Brendan Shanahan has not accomplished anywhere near that, but aren't we kind of near that same type of timeline when Masai Ujiri felt it necessary? And listen, if there was a trade that allowed the Leafs to trade for the NHL equivalent of Kawhi Leonard, I'm sure they would sign up for it. I don't even know what that is. Like William Nylander for Connor McDavid? Yeah.
Yeah, that one.
I don't know what it is. That doesn't present. But there was a combination thing that offseason, right? And mm-hmm. one happened before the other. They changed head coaches before the trade for Kawhi Leonard.
Yeah, and they fired a head coach who was well-liked, not just externally but internally. The players liked him. Has gone on to be... He hasn't won anything in Detroit, but he's something's cooking there. Like he's a very well respected guy in the league, and very few people at the end of that season, because of how they lost and who they lost to, were saying, "Man, this is a coaching issue."
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? It wouldn't have been a coaching, the coaching change minus Kawhi Leonard. Like I love Nick Nurse, and I think Dwayne Casey's really good too. But I don't think the coaching change would have accomplished anything had they not managed that Kawhi Leonard
thing. I think you might have been on to somebody.
Think so? Right?
Yeah.
So that maybe that wasn't the key part of it. Yeah. Maybe that Kawhi Leonard falling out of the sky was the key part.
Yeah.
But you're right. They did at a time when they were successful in the regular season, could not get over a hump in the playoffs. Even if you could rationalize that by looking at who they had to beat and who they couldn't beat and saying, no one else has beaten them either. They decided they opted for change.
Yep.
In that moment, and opted for change and brought in a guy who hadn't been a head coach in the NBA, was not a sure thing in any sense. Didn't change the culture even because he was internal.
Yep.
So very interesting choice if you look back on it.
Mm-hmm.
And again, we know what history, now we know how it played out. But again, if that trade doesn't happen, we have no idea how it plays out. Here, you can't really do much with the roster. You could change the coach. You could go outside and get a different coach and a different kind of coach. But I still kind of wait, it's that ticking sound, the big clock in the MLSE headquarters where people are going, hang on, okay. And look, Brendan Shanahan's a very smart guy.
Mm-hmm.
And he's also, I think, a very deft politician, which in that role you have to be, because you got to play up as much as you play down. You know, so you have to make you have to make your bosses happy, and you you have to kind of work down through the organization. But I think he's been very good at managing that three-headed monster that is ownership. But if they lose faith, then yeah, I guess you the one thing you could do, if they said you've got to do something,
mm-hmm.
there's only one something.
Yeah. And that's fire the head coach.
That's right.
And, yeah, to be fair, this was Sheldon Keefe's first quote-unquote normal season. Like, mm-hmm. he arrives midway through the 2020 season as Mike Babcock is fired, and he takes on a team that was pretty fatally flawed with the worst move of Kyle Dubas' tenure by far, the Nazem Kadri trade for Tyson Berry.
But both in the return and what they gave up. In,
right.
In hindsight, of course, everybody wanted Nazem Kadri run out of town at that point. So.
Yeah. No, the total hindsight, right? Because I remember analyzing that trade in the offseason saying, Tyson Berry, look at all those points.
Yes.
Look at all those points. Just so throw them on the blue line.
So it's always good to remind people that we were all wrong about that.
Oh, yeah. Yes, and I'm very upfront about that. But playing the results, it was horrible.
It was really horrible, yes.
So, yeah, he has that season, and then, the world comes to an end, and he goes into a bubble with a team that lost to a Zamboni driver on, like, one of the last games of the regular season before the world imploded.
Mm-hmm.
His general manager attempted to trade Tyson Berry out of town but had no takers and said, whatever, I'm not adding to this team because it stinks. And they end up losing in five games to a worse Columbus Blue Jackets team, but a Jackets team that was, like, right with them in the standings during the regular season. Next year, like, bizarro world.
Complete bizarro world, yes.
Absolute bizarro world in a bizarro North Division. And, yeah, they choked like dogs in seven games to the Montreal Canadiens, but that was bizarre. I'm not making excuses, but that was bizarre. And this year was sort of normal, but, like, go back to the beginning of this season. We didn't know if there would be fans in the building. There was huge COVID issues in the middle of this season. Again, not necessarily making excuses. I'm just painting the picture of what has happened during Sheldon Keefe's tenure here. The other thing is, if you do fire the coach, you're putting a big target on your own head.
Well, that's why you do it. You don't do it to get a target. You do it to delay something, right? Mm-hmm. It's throwing stuff over the side of a sinking ship. That's mm-hmm. why coaches are often fired. They're I'll mix up many analogies here, but human shield stuff, right?
Like, yes.
Shoot him and don't shoot me. And
I guess didn't you just hire him like three years ago?
Forget about that. Yeah, no. I don't think Sheldon Keefe did anything to get himself fired. Is that?
Okay. I think so. I mean, Christopher Stieg made some interesting points on the morning show a couple of days ago about, coaching decisions he disagreed with.
Well, the starting lineup in game four, we all disagree with that now, but because of the way it panned out, I'm not sure what the logic was, but in game six, which was a tougher task, I thought he put them in a position to win.
Mm-hmm. No, they had, they went to overtime.
Yeah.
Yeah, on the road. Had a chance to win that hockey game.
And he didn't take the high sticking penalties in the third period. If they don't, they were playing a really smart game they didn't have the series won, but they were in control in the third period of game six, closing out on the road. So, yeah, if you fire him, it's change for the sake of change. And I know we got Trakos coming up. Trakos is arguing that you fire him because of who's available.
That's right.
Yeah, you don't fire him because...
Oh, and the clock is ticking on that. Barry Trotz interviewing with the Jets today.
Yeah. Now, this is a better job than... Winnipeg's great, and I have many friends in Winnipeg.
Winnipeg.
And you're born in Winnipeg. But, just purely from a hockey point of view, I'm not talking about anything, beyond that. Like, this is a really good situation here.
I think so.
Because all you have to do is come in with a team that's already stacked and win a round, and they'll name us, what is like one of those Berkey things, right? They won't just name a street after you. They'll name like schools after you.
Correct.
And you don't have to even win the cup. You just have to win a round with this team. Mm-hmm. You should win a round with this team. Like, if I'm Barry Trotz, I would, and they'll pay you a lot, right? quite a lot.
I guess, right? I don't know. Are they still paying Mike Babcock? But yeah, it
doesn't matter. It's just money.
Yeah.
Remember the big vault, swimming, Scrooge McDuck, right? That's not an issue here. But I don't know. I don't know, and we'll get Michael on to talk about that. I don't know if that's enough of a justification. Like, I know Barry Trotz won a Stanley Cup and all of that, and he's did a very good job in Nashville, and because they and all the players liked him, and did a reasonable job in the on the island until he didn't, or if something went haywire there this year. But is that enough of a reason?
My contention was that what's the downside? But that's I guess if you're them, if you're Brendan Shanahan and you're Kyle Dubas, the downside is, well, yeah, we're kind of giving these mixed messages to ownership here that we believed in this guy. We think everything's fine. We think we're on the right path, but for some reason we're axing the guy that we told them we believed in, and we're asking them to pay another head coach, despite the Scrooge McDuck stuff, coach to not coach for this team.
Well, the downside is kind of bad faith.
Yes.
That's what the downside is that right. He's your guy.
Yeah.
And he didn't do anything wrong.
Right.
And he maybe, made some mistakes along the way, but everybody does, and he had a great regular season, and he lost in seven games to a really good team that might be better than your team. So that generally doesn't get you fired, although kind of got Dwayne Casey fired.
Yeah.
So we get back to where we started.
Yeah, we absolutely do. The last thing I'll say on this is that, the hardest thing about this is, well, okay, when is enough? Like, how many times is enough? When is the actual timeline on this thing? Like, what year are we going to wake up and something will be different? And if the result is the same, then you really, there's just no, you cannot withstand another I think it's honestly... It feels like it's next season because of the things I said, because of the actual mathematical things that are taking place at the conclusion of next season. Auston Matthews going into the final year of his contract. Kyle Dubas apparently having a contract that expires at the end of that season.
That's it.
And now you have lost in every single way. You've lost to the team that is the two-time defending Stanley Cup. There is no other ways to lose. Oh, I mean, play this back in a year when they lose somehow to, I don't know. Some sort of X-Men mutant team or something. I don't know. Would be a different way, I suppose.
They'd be good, though. Then
you're right. No, that would be a huge excuse. They're not even humans.
They're not even humans. I think next year, yes, next year is the Kyle Dubas contract, in theory, if they let him play it out.
Yeah.
But the big one is Auston Matthews being eligible. You can extend him at the end of next season. Or if you don't extend him, then you're going into the great unknown with Auston Matthews in the last year, his last year before unrestricted free agency. And you have several very, very good players on this team, and you have one great player, one generational player. So the direction of the team will be dictated by where he decides to play out the next part of his career.
Yes, and Brendan Shanahan said, and Kyle Dubas before him, I said they want Auston Matthews to be a Toronto Maple Leaf for life, because why wouldn't you?
But it's up to him.
It is.
Strangely enough, it's actually up to Auston Matthews. And so, that does feel like a tipping point.
Mm-hmm.
So in advance of said tipping point, do you throw your coach over the side because you're kind of on the clock with your best player? You want to, it'd be a penny for the best player's thoughts.
Yeah, it'd be nice to know. So we'll pay attention to where he pops up this offseason, probably with media folk that are friendly to him. I know of one podcast that he might appear on, and perhaps some insight at that location, but we'll see. Yeah, we don't know a ton about what Auston Matthews is thinking, but we have an entire summer to ponder that. That was today's top story, brought to you by Thornhill Toyota. The Toronto Blue Jays had three hits with runners in scoring position yesterday, Stephen.
Can you name the three players who got them?
Well, I know Alejandro Kirk had a big one.
Yes.
Tapia had one.
Tapia.
Yep.
And I think the other one was the other one Bo?
I don't know who the other one.
But Ramil Tapia is the one I remember. That was one sticks because we like him a lot here.
Yes, Bo was one for one with runners in scoring position. The Blue Jays take the first game of this three-game set over the Seattle Mariners. The wave of runners in scoring position hits has commenced. They are two games over 500. I think the headline, though, of that game is, as you say, Kikuchi is now strung together three straight starts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, number one, they played a clean game.
Mm-hmm.
Bo Bichette made two really nice defensive plays.
Mm-hmm.
They got a great start from Kikuchi. And the bullpen, even though weakened and even though there were a couple of wobbles, got him to the end. So it's a very different story than most of the ones we've talked about this year, because it's kind of been the flip side of that, right? I think Kikuchi's the headline here, because this appears to not be a fluke and now appears to be a trend. And, what you're seeing now is a left-handed pitcher who's topping out at, 97?
Mm-hmm.
And can get away with stuff because he can top out at 97 his location doesn't have to be perfect sometimes, right? The combination of the 97 plus the splitter plus the whatever that other pitch, whatever we're calling that other pitch.
Slider.
Yeah. So slider, cutter thing. So a hard breaking ball, a soft breaking ball, and a 97 mile an hour fastball. Like what you saw yesterday, he threw fastballs that if a guy was comfortable, they weren't necessarily, you know, right on the black. But you can get away with that.
It's what Robbie Ray did last year.
It's exactly what Robbie Ray did last year.
And he gave up his fair share of home runs, but it didn't matter because he didn't walk anybody. Now, Kikuchi still has some work to do in that regard because he did walk three again yesterday. Only gave up one hit. Mm-hmm. But opponents are hitting sub-Mendoza line against the fastball and the splitter, which you understand. If this third pitch is a thing, this is kind of what we thought might happen with the Pete Walker, Toronto Blue Jays, Robbie Ray experience, that this is it's too early to say, because I guess it could fall off the rails at any point in time here. But, you know, and we talked to Shai yesterday, is there going to be a eureka moment? And was that eureka moment the changing? Apparently the way he throws that slider cutter thing is more like a mentality thing than an actual grip. Like he's just been told to throw it a different way. He's examined the rotation, the RPMs on that thing, and he's throwing it a different way. And it really does feel like that was it. It was definitely limiting the repertoire.
Yes. They got rid of the hesitation in the delivery, too, because he used to pause.
And he cut his hair.
There's that.
He had a new haircut. I mean, now, okay, it's hard. I don't want to get too far ahead of myself because it's one victory, and it's only the first game of a three-game set, and it's coming off the heels of, what, four straight series losses. But here's what I see. I see, well, one, an offense that has underperformed, but you look at all the advanced numbers, and I'll say it again. I don't know if I said this on the air, but I definitely tweeted it out. Matt Chapman is due for a huge week or two or month because he's actually produced the highest hard hit percentage of his entire career early in the season. Like, this is a guy that was a top 10 MVP candidate in 2018, didn't have a hard hit percentage as high as it's been this season. That kind of matches the eye test. He's hit into some hard, loud outs recently.
Yes, and he had some fly balls die that looked like they should have gone out. There was a shot he hit last night into the batter's eye. Yes, that would be a good thing.
Bo Bichette looks all the way back.
Yes.
Vlad Jr., he's got the long hit streak, but that's all well and good. But, yeah, you got to start hitting for extra base power. I think he has, like, a double and a home run over the, 14-game hit streak, right?
That's right. He's become a one-for-four singles hitter, which is fine. You could use one of those on your team, but that's not him. I assume he will revert to him at some point.
Well, in the advance, the StatCast numbers for him look almost identical to what he's done last year, maybe a little bit more chase. George Springer's been consistent start to finish. The point being, and Alejandro Kirk looks like Alejandro Kirk again.
Well, he's got that level swing again that at his best when we first noticed and we first saw him, that swing where he just seems to barrel everything up. And he hasn't been really right since he got hurt last year. Never really came back and never had, but right now, mm-hmm. And we talked about this before, even before the last couple of games. So just you're watching the way the ball's coming off his bat.
Yep.
And his sense of how comfortable he looks now hitting, like he's just going to be a line drive machine now.
It feels like it.
Yep.
So in an overall sense, the offense looks like it's about to explode. The rotation now employs two of the top 10 American League Cy Young Award candidates very early in the season, but Kevin Gausman and Alek Manoah look legit, legit, legit. Jose Barrios has had some bumps in the road.
It'd be interesting to see him tonight because if he's good tonight, mm-hmm. And it's interesting because the Mariners starter is an interesting guy too. It had a great April, not so great May. So you don't quite know what you're getting on the other side tonight, but if Barrios starts to look a little more, and there's been some extenuating circumstances in terms of climate, you know, a couple of his starts where he's pitched in horrible weather.
Yep.
But if he just comes out and looks comfortable and looks like Barrios, so add him to the mix.
And then this guy who it should be reminded to people, was an all-star in the first half of last year before it did all fall apart in the second half. But you say Kikuchi, this isn't out of nowhere what they're seeing.
No, it's not a guy off the scrap heap. It's not a 4A guy who's having a couple of good months. It's a guy who was an all-star at midseason last year. And again, a left-hander who throws 97. There aren't a lot of those.
No. And then Hyunjin Ryu, wild card, but he's got a security blanket and Danny Jansen back.
Yep.
and the bullpen. I would say the one area that I'm not totally convinced, but is not nearly as bad as the train wreck that was the 2021 Toronto Blue Jays bullpen. I'm telling you right now, it's very difficult to do this in a sport like baseball where it's every day and, you know, the worst team can beat the best team. But it feels like now is the time where they're about to start this run. And part of that is the schedule. You got the Cincinnati Reds coming in for three this weekend. Mariners, I know they just took, two or three from the Mets coming into this series. But that's a very beatable team. This feels like it. This feels like the worm turned from good to bad after the first month. And now it feels like the worm is turning back again from bad to good.
Well, logically it should. And I know it's not logical. I know sports are not logical. But the softer schedule, the performance of the rotation really consistently, but you know, adding the Kikuchi factor to it now, the fact that the offense has underperformed, what you would assume is that they start taking care of business against some of these weaker teams. So this is where you start winning 2 out of 3 or 3 out of 3 or 3 out of 4 in series. And you can look at the schedule. Like, that's not an excuse. Just look at what their remaining schedule is compared to what they just went through.
How are the Yankees playing the Orioles again?
It's amazing, isn't it? But still 19 games to come with the Orioles, although they're fourth place, right? They're still not. Yeah. So they're not the worst team in the American League East right now. Logically, all of this stuff should add up to the Jays relatively comfortably being in the postseason. And then we'll see what happens. You kind of like this team for the postseason with that rotation. That doesn't mean, you know, there'll be a trade deadline in the middle of the summer.
Yeah.
Josh Bell would be nice.
Sure would.
I think you're right about the bullpen right now because it looks a little ragged. And, you know, without Meza and without Romano last night, although sounds like he had the flu, but
yeah,
not COVID. So that's better than him having forearm tightness, knock on wood. It looks a little thin, a little ragged right now. And again, they had to do a lot of heavy lifting that first month and a half. But you can always find those guys, right? You can do, if they go out and do the equivalent of the Richard Simber acquisitions last year and then one more bat. And again, Josh Bell would be the very nice one. I'm sure a lot of other teams are thinking that way. But
Then,
what's not to like?
Where's Nate Pearson?
That's a weird one, huh? Like I was going down that. I go down that road every once in a while and say, hey, everybody else seems to be on a rehab assignment. Where's he?
Yeah.
He's not. He's, and I think Benny wrote this, tweeted this out today, that it's still, he's a ways off. Okay. He threw a bullpen.
Yeah, what does that mean? It must mean that they didn't like the results that they were seeing out of the bullpen.
Yeah, I don't think he hasn't thrown to live hitters, as far as I know, post-mono. Mono. So, yeah, it's... Well, it's kind of, I hate to say it, but it kind of lines up with everything else in Nate's career.
Correct.
Right? Stuff just doesn't seem to fall into place for him. Mm-hmm. But yes, his arm would look terrific in the middle of that bullpen. You know, Julian Merriweather, who is great when nobody's on base and terrible when people are on base, if you could ever unpick him, maybe Pete should spend a little more time with him.
Right.
You know, now that he's figured Kikuchi
out. He needs to sit at the front of the class. Yeah, come here, son.
Yeah, say, hang on. You throw 100, but you don't seem to want to do that necessarily. And
he fixed Kikuchi onto his next test case.
So that would be, it's a little more swing and miss in that bullpen would be excellent right now. Mm-hmm. And everybody should be at it. Like, I know Meza had an MRI, so we'll see what comes out of that. But he's been so good that... You do kind of now, although I'll tell you, Ryan Brocky looked good last night.
Yeah.
So another guy who's had a lot of bad luck, but has a great arm. Mm-hmm. So you kind of hope that maybe he can fill that left-handed void for a little while. And maybe, you know, if he's right and kind of lives up to his potential and stays healthy, and then you have Meza back, then you got two really good lefties. But it's look, the pieces are all pretty much there. Now, stuff can go wrong.
Yep.
It does. And you know what the other thing is? Good players sometimes have bad seasons. I know that sounds obvious, but sometimes in the middle of a year like this, you're looking at somebody and saying, you know, he's better than that. And he's gonna revert to himself. But sometimes for a year, they don't.
Yep. And there might be mitigating circumstances. And, you know, like, again, yesterday, Shai reminded me of the injuries that Vlad suffered in that three-homer game. Mm-hmm. And everybody nicked up bumps and bruises, and not an excuse. It's part of the game, but
plays every day, right? Like he does show up every day, and we don't talk about it enough, and just kind of assume, you know, that he's going to play 161 games every year.
Apologies to the Boston Red Sox who took a half-game lead on the Orioles.
Oh, sorry. I'm sorry I missed that.
All right. When we come back, we will talk to Michael Tracos of Post Media as the Toronto Maple Leafs held their season-ending media availability today. It's Fan Drive Time. Ben Annis, Stephen Brunt, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Flatty makes in-game at-bats look like batting practice. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and the Toronto Blue Jays play here on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Fan Drive Time, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Ben Annis and Stephen Brund. And it's one thing to talk extemporaneously for 2 hours and, you know, come to the conclusion that, yeah, maybe this team should fire the coach. I said that yesterday.
It took 2 hours, but you got to it right at the end.
It's quite another to put pen to paper or finger to keyboard and type it out. Michael Tracos did that today. Why the Maple Leafs should fire Sheldon Keefe and hire Barry Trotz. Michael joins us. He of Post Media. How's it going, Michael?
Pretty good. It was more of a hunt and peck kind of column, you know?
Well, congrats. I wonder if today's media availability changed. I mean, I guess it wouldn't change your opinion, but it really didn't sound like that was on the verge of happening.
No, it didn't. I think if it was on the verge of happening, Sheldon Keefe probably wouldn't have been trotted out there today and wouldn't have been talking about what the challenge is for next year, because there wouldn't be a next year. But I'm kind of shocked. I don't know how you guys interpreted the end of season press conference or availability that was today. And I guess there's been a lot of them over the last 6 years, but complacency was the word that kind of kept coming to my mind. We're 2 years away from Austin Matthews reaching unrestricted free agency, and the lack of urgency from this team, and maybe it'll change in the off season, but just based on what I'm hearing from players is, you know, we're close, we're getting there. I'm sorry, but this team's not close. Like, close is what Colorado is right now, or even Vegas, who missed the playoffs, but at least we're in the conference finals in each of the last 2 years, and then also in the Stanley Cup final a couple years before that. Toronto, not having won a round and losing in Game 7, you're close to reaching the second round, but you're not close to winning a Stanley Cup. And hearing the players talk today, it sounded like they were just on the verge of something special, where I'm thinking this might have been the best year that they've had in the last 6 years, and there's no guarantee that it's going to get better or even be the same next year.
You know, I don't disagree with you. I thought the message today, we were talking about this earlier, Michael, is just that it wasn't as bad as last year was kind of the message today, which it's convenient that last year was so horrible that they could at least say, well, yeah, we didn't roll over and die against a team that was 28 points behind us in the regular season. So, hey, things are looking up. But make the case, and I read your piece, but just for those who haven't, make the case that is the move that should be made at this moment.
Well, Stephen, I think some sort of change has to take place when you fail in the first round again. And you know what? I think if you go ahead and you start splitting up this core four, or even if you want to include Riley and make it a core five, I think if you start splitting those guys up, those are moves that you're going to regret, or you have the potential of regretting. You change the coach, you change the narrative. And like I said in my piece, it's not so much about what Sheldon Keefe did or didn't do this year. Obviously, the Leafs had a record-breaking regular season. You can't argue with the results individually from guys from like Marner, Matthews, Tavares, Nylander. I think everyone on that team took a step forward. And yet, I don't know how you approach next season with the same roster, with the same coach, with basically everything set in place, status quo, and expect to go through 82 games in this city, in this market, without just completely demoralizing everyone inside that room. So the fact that a guy like Barry Trotz is available, and we're talking about arguably, you know, outside of maybe John Cooper, I don't think there's a better coach in the NHL. A guy that was, unemployed for 3 days before the Islanders swooped in and took him after he was dismissed or walked away in Washington after winning a cup. Barry Trotz might be the missing ingredient. And if not Barry Trotz, you might even argue that Pete DeBoer might be the missing piece here. Just a new voice behind the bench. Maybe it's not so much a guy that can get him over the hump for game seven, but just can, you know, change the feel in the dressing room for those first 82 games. And then, you know, maybe it's a different attitude, different atmosphere going into the playoffs. But yeah, to go basically right now, I think you're really forcing Kyle Dubas into a corner saying, okay, well, you've got to make some sort of change and it's got to be significant and it's not going to be the coach. Well, is William Nylander that guy who's got a target on his back? And, you know, that could be end up becoming just if it is a trade, it could end up becoming a trade that really bites him in the butt.
Yeah, honestly, like this is kind of the conclusion I came to yesterday. And the more I hear you talk about it, did feel like the Barry Trotz thing was almost manna from heaven, right? Like you get this guy just appears and he's got the bona fides. He's available. You go out in the first round, so you don't have to, you know, wait until you bow out in the second round and then maybe change your coach. Like you're right there. The Jets are just starting the interview process right now. You could do it right now, and then you say to your fan base at the very least, and maybe your players as well, depending on how they feel, we've done something. This is not acceptable. And I don't know how important that is to the players, but I'll tell you, the fan base would be satiated to some degree. And again, I don't know if that's the best way to run your organization, but Barry Trotz, again, you're not just doing this. You're not making a move for the sake of move, which is the thing that they've repeated the last two times they've done this end of season media availability. You don't want to make a lateral move. This hardly feels like a lateral move when you're going to a guy who brought the Stanley Cup to the Washington Capitals, a team that kind of had the same label this Leafs team did, is that they couldn't get it done in the postseason. They were too concerned with offense to be a playoff team. And now I'm running through my head as to the reasons why you wouldn't do that, other than you are truly wedded to Sheldon Keefe, and that it shines too harsh a light on what you've done if you're Brendan Shanahan or Kyle Dubas over the last half decade.
Yeah, I agree, Ben. Like, it's like sometimes you change coaches not just because of what the coach has done in your market. Sometimes it's about just there's a better option out there. And I think in Trotz that's the case right now. Like I said, this team as constructed on paper, you're probably looking at them saying, yeah, next year roll them out there again, and they're probably going to end up one or two or three in their division. They should be, once again, a Stanley Cup contender. The only thing is, can they get over that mental hurdle and that hump of getting over the first round? And we say just, like, can they just get over that? But that's a major thing. And if you've got a guy in Trotz, and, you know, like, I don't know how important a head coach is in hockey compared to other sports, whether football is still at the top of the list and maybe basketball second, but I think a lot of times it's not even the X's and O's. It's just a different voice, a different message. And I even asked this to Sheldon Keefe today. I said, how do you go about going into a season where everyone just cares about, can this team get over the first round? And how do you avoid having your message just be received as a stale one? And he said that's the challenge. And I think that really is going to be the challenge next year, is that, you know, a lot of fans are probably going to be tuning this team out until the first round of the playoffs. And if you're not careful, the players might be tuning them out as well. So to have that different voice, and it's not just a change for the sake of change. We keep saying this, but you know, Barry Trotz went into Washington, very similar situation, a team that couldn't get over the hump, had all the talent, had all the offensive talent, and was just missing maybe a little, I don't know what the ingredient was, but was missing a little something. And then well, we saw it in the playoffs. Like Ovechkin was just a beast in that year when they won it. I think it was 2018, if I believe, or 2019. And, it just did wonders for them. So, again, I think it was an easy move. And I think the fact that Trotz is available is one of those kind of once-in-a-lifetime things. But when he is available, I think every team has to jump at it. And we're going to see it. Like, Trotz is not just going to visit Winnipeg. I can imagine he's going to Las Vegas after that, maybe Philadelphia. Like, there's a lot of teams that would love to have this guy behind their bench.
Yeah, and you could argue that the best situation, and again, not that this situation is available to him at this moment, but this is the best situation in terms of taking a team that's ready to win, and but you know, just a very low bar, right? You get through the first round, and you'd be a success. But like, Michael, if that doesn't happen, like if it is status quo, as it certainly appeared today, Kyle Dubas' contract's up at he's out of contract at the end of this coming season. That plus the Austin Matthews, the moment when you can extend Austin Matthews, or Austin Matthews heads into his last season before free agency. Like, that seems kind of like a tipping point here, one way or another. And I wonder, changing a coach, changing the message, but like we may be at a point where we're changing a larger direction here. By then, it might go up to Brendan Shanahan too. Doesn't it kind of feel like that's when the wave breaks here?
I agree, Stephen. Like the Shanahan plan started with Austin Matthews. He was really the centerpiece of this whole model of, let's think, let's get a lot of good players and let's go with that. And, they've made their bet with, Matthews, Marner, Nylander, then Tavares. And that's not just a Dubas move. That was a Shanahan move as well. And they all are all in with these guys. So, I could see it as, if this thing doesn't go the way they hope it eventually goes, that, it's Dubas out, it's Shanahan out, and, if the Leafs aren't careful, 2 years from now, it could be Austin Matthews who's out as well, because, by then it would be, 8 years of not getting past the first round or not getting close to a championship. And, for a guy that's in his mid-20s now, how many more years does he want to waste on that, especially when he's probably looking around and saying, Connor McDavid's already won 2 rounds, and that's on a team that a lot of people would say is inferior to Toronto, and yet here they are in the second round of the playoffs and looking pretty strong. So, we keep asking this question in Toronto: how long before McDavid gets tired of Edmonton and wants out? Well, now it's fair to ask about Austin Matthews. I don't think he's going to be asking out of Toronto, but 2 years from now, he could just walk away. Mm-hmm. And the Leafs could have nothing to show for it.
No, it's absolutely true. Before I let you go, I mean, there's another potential head coaching candidate out there that not only has one Stanley Cup, he has 3 Stanley Cup rings. I'm talking about Joel Quenneville, which, I mean, it's a huge can of worms, right? He would first have to apply for reinstatement. Would this city, would this franchise take on that conversation? Had you thought about Joel Quenneville? I mean, do you think he coaches again in the National Hockey League, Michael, and could it be Toronto?
I wouldn't be surprised if Quenneville ends up coaching again. Would I choose Toronto as that city or that market? Not in a million years. I think if he goes anywhere, it's going to be somewhere where, hockey isn't the number one sport. Maybe it's a Las Vegas, maybe a team like that, but I just don't see the rush to get a guy like Quenneville. I think you're just opening yourself up to even more kind of questions and, unneeded or unwarranted or wanted attention at that point. But, it's a fair question to ask. When does Joel Quenneville get back into the NHL if he actually wants to? You got to remember, this guy's not someone who's in his 40s anymore, so... he very well could be done, but I wouldn't be surprised if he ends up somewhere, but I doubt it's going to be a major market, that's for sure.
Well, Michael, we appreciated the time today. Enjoyed the piece very much. Thanks for doing this.
All right, thanks, guys. Really appreciate it.
There's Michael Tracos of Post Media. Yeah, it does feel like the Quenneville thing, okay, as much as you would put some attention on yourself if you went out and got Barry Trotz and you fired the guy that you handpicked and has been your right-hand man for your entire career going back to Sault Ste. Marie, mm-hmm. and you only gave him 3 years and, 2.5 and through very trying conditions. Okay, you put a little bit of spotlight on yourself. You're in the middle of the stage with the brightest spotlight possible if you go out and you're the first team to bring back Joel Quenneville.
Well, again, the first thing you'd have to do is convince your bosses that was a good idea.
Yeah.
So that would be 2 publicly traded companies and Larry Tannenbaum and say, this is what we want to do.
Right.
And it would be a very interesting discussion, to say the least. It kind of depends. I guess the world, everything about the world right now would tell you that you can sell just about anything, and you can sell redemption stories and, forgiveness stories and all of that stuff. It happens all the time. So is he going to be a pariah forever? I'm thinking no. The timeline's interesting. As Michael said, he's not a kid. So he's at the end of his career, not at the beginning of his career. So the question would be whether he wants to do it. But if he first has to apply for reinstatement and the league has to decide they're going to reinstate him, then you would have to measure what the public temperature is in terms of how much the public actually blames him for what happened mm-hmm. with Kyle Beach in Chicago, how much they think that's him mm-hmm. or how much they think, you know, he was an organizational guy who, you know, because of the protocols had to pay for it, but that it wasn't him personally. Mm-hmm. And that's an interesting question for the, you know, kind of public sentiment. Like mm-hmm. that would be the issue. That's the kind of debate you would have on the inside and say, can we sell this?
Yeah. No, honestly, it reminds you of the Joe Paterno situation.
Yeah.
And, I mean, there's been people that have written about this, that you do a straw poll of people that are not, you know, hardcore media consumers, and you ask them, what did Joe Paterno do? And, like, more than half of the respondents say that he was the perpetrator mm-hmm. of those horrible, horrible crimes. Now, no doubt there was a total abdication of responsibility on the part of Joe Paterno.
Yes. Well, yes. He's more than turned a blind eye.
Yeah, but like, yeah. The idea that you could rehabilitate Joe Paterno back into the public good graces seems unlikely. Yeah, it's a different situation altogether with Joel Quenneville. But yeah, you mentioned it. Publicly traded company. Roberto Osuna did not play a game, did not appear in a Toronto Blue Jays uniform once he was suspended by Major League Baseball. That was not going to happen. And they didn't say it immediately, but we kind of wondered about that possibility. Mm-hmm. And under the cloak of darkness, it was incredible that they were able to get a serviceable piece in return under those circumstances, getting Ken Giles back from the Houston Astros, who, yeah, I understand they had issues with and had postseason problems. But, yeah, it really doesn't feel like either Bell or Rogers or any publicly traded company would want anything to do with that, despite the fact that in pro sports, organizations take on PR headaches all the time.
Well,
if Roberto Osuna continued
to play.
Correct. Yeah. If Greg Hardy, he had a job.
Yeah. It's that's what I'm saying. The lesson over and over again is, you know, if you can help us, we'll find a way to get through this and we'll find a way to excuse it. But I think the Osuna case with the Blue Jays is instructive.
Yep.
Because they could have brought him back. They needed him as a baseball player, and there was not a moment where anybody kind of contemplated that. They decided they didn't want to have that press conference where they said, this guy's coming back to play, and this is why we want him back to play, and this is why we're welcoming back him back in our team. They wouldn't do that.
And if you are a cynical sports executive, it's much easier to point to a player and say, well, this guy's actually good. Like, I can see the actual, here's the impact. Here's the ERA. Here's the home runs. Here's the batting average. Here's the on-base percentage. Here's the goals. Here's the points. You know, here's the save percentage. With a head coach, it's, yeah, I don't know, this guy won 3 Stanley Cups with one of the great dynasties in the history of the sport. I think most of that was Patrick Kane and Jonathan Toews.
Sure, it always is, but coaches, there's a bit of mystique around. You could try and sell it.
Yeah.
And in this market, it would be, and I'm not sure, Michael, like, yeah, it would be easier to sell it in a place where they don't care about hockey.
Yeah.
Because there wouldn't be a
headline. The one beat writer is going to write the one column and that's it.
It'd be a story here, but this is also a desperate hockey market.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's going to happen.
No, I don't think so. Again, because of the corporate things. But yeah, okay, so here's the Evander Kane. Like, mm-hmm. do the comparable. Evander yeah. Kane has played well in Edmonton, but a private owner and Daryl Cates. I don't think for one second that the Toronto Maple Leafs, even if they thought Evander Kane was the missing ingredient between them and a Stanley Cup, they could have weathered that. That would have been an acceptable move to make.
I think you're right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Hey, you know what? I'm kind of okay with that too.
I'm okay with that as well.
All right. When we come back, we will go down to the ballpark, get you set for game 2 between the Blue Jays and Mariners, and talk to the man who's going to call the game. Dan Schulman next as the Fan Drive Time continues. Ben Ennis, Stephen Brunt, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.